The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, I certainly try. I try to keep you informed. Some weeks it's more difficult than others. Welcome to a Friday. And once today is over, we will have made it through the first week of the new year. Really. It's only been the first week of the new year, and so much has happened. One thing I love about Fridays is an email that I get delivered from Vice into my email box every Friday that is the week in one sentence. Because as try as I might, and I start off the week with all good intentions, like I'm going to keep track of what happened, the ridiculous myriad of news stories that go on during the week. But things always get jumbled up. There's too much going on, and I always wind up losing it somewhere in the middle of the week, thinking it's just too much, and my head spins. So here's today's week 50. Yes, it is week 50 of the Trump administration in one sentence. You ready? President Trump used the frigid temperatures over New Year's weekend as evidence that global warming is a hoax, ramped up his support for Iranians' right to protest their government, kept to his decade-old tradition ringing in the new year golfing at Mar-a-Lago, once again refused to let go of Clinton's email scandal, and suggested that one of her former aides should be jailed, forced his press secretary to clarify that he did not, in fact, think the Department of Justice is part of this deep state, threatened North Korea with nuclear annihilation and defended the size of his button, lashed out at his former chief strategist Steve Bannon for his criticism of the Trump administration in Michael Wolff's new book, learned some of the names of his inner circle has been calling him, maybe for the first time, from the same book, called Bannon nuts in an official statement, and then threatened to sue him. Also threatened to sue the phony book's publisher and Wolf himself, and saw his administration declare war on legal weed and open up previously protected waters for oil drilling. I get the fascination with this book. I really do. In fact, Fire and Fury, it's called. Part of me wants to read it. I'm in the middle of one book that I'm reading in small spurts for a guest who will be joining us hopefully in the next few weeks, dealing with, believe it or not, depression and anxiety. And it's more than just that. I think it's something that so many of us are suffering from these days, especially in the Trump era. And he's got a very different take on this epidemic. So we'll get to that. I also, over the break, read the Bruce Springsteen autobiography, Born to Run, that I honestly wouldn't have read except one of my friends sent it to me and said, here, you need a good book to read while you're taking a week off. And so I did. And it felt good. It felt good to escape into Bruce Springsteen song lyrics and references and things unrelated to politics. Now, my trepidation over whether or not to read this Fire and Fury book is grounded in a few different areas. One is, I don't want to spend the money on it. I understand Michael Wolff is not Donald Trump or Steve Bannon. I also know he's not known as like a great journalist. He's more of a sensationalist who has done good work in the past, but some of his methods and some of his work has been questionable. But in the coverage over the last few days, I found that some of the stories that he puts forth in this book have been corroborated. Others might be stretched a little bit, but knowing what I know about this administration, I tend to think there's more there than not, right? And I think it would, reading this book would back up the impressions that I have of this administration. It would also probably turn my stomach more in knots than it already is, right? And again, I don't want to, it's already number one on the Amazon bestseller list, and it was not even supposed to be released until Tuesday, but Trump's threats to sue not only Steve Bannon for the statements that he made, for the quotes that are in the book, but to sue the publisher and the author for, I guess, for libel, to try to coerce them into not releasing the book, only made the publisher release it 4 days early. So it is officially out now. People have been picking it up. It's selling out in brick and mortar bookstores, wherever you can find it. Apparently on Amazon, there's a 2 to 4 week wait. There's always the Kindle, though. But then again, I don't want to spend my hard-earned dollars on this stuff, that something that's going to make me even more nauseous than I usually am on a daily basis anyway. So I'm a little, a little confused. If I had it here, I'd probably read it, because it's like a train wreck that you can't look away from. And there are enough stories, most of which we've read. Well, I don't even want to say most of which, some of which we've read in excerpts in The New Yorker, and stories that the author himself, Michael Wolff, wrote at The Hollywood Reporter, where he is a columnist. Just reading Ivanka Trump's description of her father's hair and what that thing is on the top of his head, you know what, is worth probably the price of admission. But again, it's the principle of the thing. Money is too scarce these days as it is to spend money even on the Kindle edition, which is probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 bucks. Still don't know that I want to do it. So I actually went on the website for the local library here in Coral Springs, Florida, where I live. And although they do have Michael Wolff's book on Rupert Murdoch in stock in the library for checking out, they do not have Fire and Fury yet. So, and I'm sure once they do get it in, there's probably already a waiting list. So I don't know. I'll figure it out. Maybe one of these days I'll read it. If someone wants to gift it to me, you can do that. You know, we've got the Amazon portal at NicoleSandler.com. So if you're going to buy it on Amazon, feel free to use that. Just saying. But there is the train wreck aspect of it that you can't look away. But everything about Trump is like that, right? I didn't listen. I don't know if Sarah Sanders did a press briefing today or not. But yesterday, you need look no further than just Donald Trump's tweets and some of the ridiculous questions and the even more asinine answers that she gives to get your fill of insanity.
You just said that people should question the mental fitness of Kim Jong-un. So then isn't it dangerous for the president to be taunting him on Twitter?
I don't think that it's taunting to stand up for the people of this country. I think what's dangerous is to ignore the continued threats. If the previous administration had done anything and dealt with North Korea, dealt with Iran, instead of sitting by and doing nothing, we wouldn't have to clean up their mess now.
Sorry, I did call him. Sarah,
it's a taunting tweet
to say that he has a larger nuclear button.
I think it's just a fact.
Okay, so Kristen Walker says to her, it's a taunting tweet to say that he has a bigger button, and Sarah Sanders just says, well, I think it's a fact. That's the kind of thing that gets me nuts. And so when people are questioning Michael Wolff's credibility, in fact, he was on the Today Show this morning. Savannah Guthrie asked him about that.
I have recordings. I have notes. I am certainly and absolutely in every way comfortable with everything I've reported in this book.
Would you release any of those recordings since your credibility is being questioned?
My credibility is being questioned by a man who has less credibility than perhaps anyone who has ever walked on earth at this point.
And I think that's a pretty honest statement that he made. Donald Trump is probably less credibility than any other person walking on the face of the earth today. The man lies. Everything out of his mouth is a lie. So I'm more prone to believe something written in this book than anything Dump says. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see if I read it or not. If I do, I'll share. For right now, I'm not. What we are going to do, though, is check out what's news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The New York Times Thursday night broke a bombshell story reporting that the president in March gave firm instructions to the top White House lawyer to stop Attorney General Jeff Sessions from recusing himself in the Russia investigation. The Times' Michael Schmidt spoke with MSNBC.
You're reporting that back in March, Trump told the top White House lawyer to stop him, and the top White House lawyer tried to do that.
Correct, and afterwards, the president got very angry, and the president's been open about his anger, but this was a one-on-one, was in front of several other White House officials, and the president said that he needed an attorney general who was going to protect them. He said that he wanted something along the lines of what RFK had been for JFK or what Eric Holder had been for Barack Obama, and then he said, "Where's my Roy Cohn?" referring to his longtime personal lawyer and fixer who had done the communist investigations in the 1950s. But these are different events that we covered that Mueller has learned about in the course of his investigation as he looks at the question of obstruction.
The other part of the story was what else Mueller has reportedly now corroborated, as Rachel Maddow explains.
FBI Director James Comey's bombshell claims about President Trump have been substantiated by the special counsel Robert Mueller. I mean, these are the claims that led to the special counsel being appointed in the first place. These are the claims that are at the heart of the president's personal legal liability for potentially criminal obstruction of justice. In this new reporting that has just been posted by the New York Times, reporter Michael Schmidt says Robert Mueller has now obtained independent corroboration of these crucial claims from James Comey about President Trump.
Yeah, on April 11th, Comey testified, when he testified before Congress, he said on April 11th, Trump called him and said, "You got to help me get out the word with the Justice Department that I'm not under investigation. How are we going to get that out if you talk to the Justice Department about it?" And when the White House handed over notes and documents that they had to the special counsel's office, they handed over stuff from Reince Priebus, and there was handwritten notes from a conversation that Reince Priebus had with the president on April 11th, in which the president discussed with him the conversation that he had with Comey. These things substantiated what Comey was saying in his memos. They showed what Comey was saying in his memos led Trump to have a conversation with Reince Priebus about it. So that is what the evidence that Mueller has that shows that these events that Comey has described indeed occurred. And as we know, the White House has said that Comey is a liar and that he made these things up. So in terms of substantiating, understanding whether what Comey said is true, this gets Mueller closer to that.
As if that's not enough, much of the media is fixated on the new book by Michael Wolff, Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House, which was supposed to be published on January 9th, but moved up after Trump's attorney threatened the author and publisher with a cease and desist order. Wolff appeared on the Today Show Friday morning.
The book is published as of 9 o'clock this morning. The president's lawyer sent a cease and desist letter threatening legal action against you and the publisher, to which you say?
And they sent that yesterday before they actually had read the book, but actually what I say is where do I send the box of chocolates?
You think he's helping you sell books?
Absolutely. I mean, and not only is he helping me sell books, but he's helping me prove the point of the book. I mean, this is extraordinary that a president of the United States would try to stop the publication of a book. This doesn't happen, has not happened from other presidents, would not even happen from a CEO of a mid-sized company.
The book doesn't paint a very flattering portrait of the president.
You said that these senior people insult his intelligence. What are the kinds of things people would say?
They say he's a moron, an idiot, actually there's a competition to sort of get to the bottom line here of who this man is. Let's remember, this man does not read, does not listen. So he's like a pinball, just shooting off the sides.
Although the major news organizations say they haven't yet verified all the stories in the book, Michael Wolff claims it's all true and says he's got recordings and notes. Thursday also brought with it a sweeping new offshore drilling plan aimed at opening huge swaths of the Atlantic, Pacific, and Arctic oceans to oil exploration, areas that are currently protected. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced a rollback of an Obama-era policy which urged federal prosecutors to refrain from targeting state legal cannabis operations. The pushback from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle was swift, with Colorado Senator Cory Gardner taking action.
And I call on Attorney General Sessions to explain to me why President Trump was wrong in 2016 and what changed their minds, and that they reverse their decision to withdraw and rescind the Cole Memorandum, and that they re-implement and reinstate the Cole Memorandum. And until that happens, I think I am obligated by the people of Colorado to take all steps necessary to protect the state of Colorado and their rights. And that's why I will be putting today a hold on every single nomination from the Department of Justice until Attorney General Jeff Sessions lives up to the commitment that he made to me in my pre-confirmation meeting with him that was specifically about this issue of states' rights in Colorado. I got the
And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. And for a bit more of what's going on in the news, because there is other news going on, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service at TalkMediaNews.com. Luke Vargas is the chief foreign correspondent. Hey, Luke, are people buzzing over at the UN about this book as well?
Not at all, because this new year has gotten off with quite a bang when it comes to foreign policy development.
No kidding.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. But both on the international front and the domestic front, I feel like this book is a big distraction from a lot of major storylines that aren't getting quite enough attention.
Yes, and I'm wondering, you know, even though it's not complimentary towards Trump, and he tends to hate anything that it, you know, doesn't bow down at his feet, I have a feeling they kind of maybe are thankful for some of the distractions, because there's a lot of bad news, a lot of bad stuff already happened just in this first week of the new year.
Yeah, the thing that really jumps out to me as being something a little bit like net neutrality that I'm not either sort of some conservatives like in at the time when they make that repeal, but may come to regret when the midterms come around and Democrats have a pretty good issue to help draw young people to the polls. I think this decision by the DOJ to basically supersede state's law when it comes to the legalization of marijuana and try and direct federal attorneys to bring prosecutions in those states for federal drug crimes is another one that both sort of defies traditional conservative principles of federalism, mm-hmm. And sort of, you know, generates some hypocrisy there. But also, I again, it's like one of those touchstone issues that I just think young people are fed up with having, you know, sort of conservative opinions keep leading the way, especially when public opinion is so strongly now behind legalization efforts. So that's one of them that I almost wonder if it was a relief to the administration that that wasn't getting a lot of headlines yet.
Right. You know, and it's not only that. I mean, it is a way to get young people to the polls, I think, and to get them excited about something. But on a bigger level, on, you know, a scientific level, not that, you know, I know science is kind of a dirty word with this administration, but when we have such a horrendous opioid crisis going on, and there is anecdotal proof anyway, that cannabis helps people get off the opioids and it's a hell of a lot safer, they're totally misdirecting their resources. I mean, if you want to have a war on drugs, have a war on the bad drugs that are killing people.
Well, and you've already seen some of President Trump's strongest allies in the Congress hitting him on that. Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, who's been a big ally of President Trump in the House of Representatives, had a quote where he said it was heartless and cold of Jeff Sessions to do this move.
Wow.
And reading the quote, he should focus his energies on prosecuting criminals, not patients. So you're right. And a little bit like the offshore drilling, which is also, you know, one of those headlines that came out yesterday.
Amazing.
That's getting pushback from some Republicans. It seems like perhaps better to be talking about Trump's personality and getting to whip up his base and into fake news allegations than it is to be actually talking about the issue.
Right. We also had, this was the week that Donald Trump, again, for it seemed like for a couple of weeks, he laid off on the little rocket man stuff, but now he comes back and taunts him about the size of his button. I mean, this stuff is just, it's bone chilling how frighteningly stupid and dangerous it is.
Kind of funny about the Korea comments from President Trump are that on one hand, you know, he's using this threatening rhetoric to dial up tensions, but then also taking credit for the fact that totally unrelated to anything he's done, mm-hmm. South Korea and North Korea are going to be sitting down at the negotiating table next week. And, you know, I am part of, I think, probably a pretty relatively large contingent of people who think, at the very least, you don't lose all that much by having negotiations.
Nope.
But that said, I mean, there's no suggestion this is going to open up a major line of dialogue that's going to fix the Korean crisis. But at the same time, there's nothing to suggest that it was the sanctions, it was Trump's threats, as he claimed, that have gotten the North Koreans to talk. And in fact, when President Trump in that same tweet about the button, I believe at the bottom, had something about how, you know, my sanctions forced little rocket man to want to talk to the South Koreans for the first time ever is just totally false. I know Kim Jong-un has not been around for that long, but
right.
He pursued direct negotiations with South Korea in 2015 in December, and then before that in 2013. So, I mean, I guess we could fill up a whole show by, you know, calling out factual inaccuracies. But this notion that in one tweet you both like, you know, keep going down this threatening rhetoric route, but then also purport to take credit for diplomacy doesn't really make much sense to me.
No, not at all. Not at all. But nothing he says makes sense to me, so that's not unusual. Now, I see you have here U.S.-South Korea trade talks begin. Do we have somebody who works with South Korea? I thought our State Department was not staffed up in that area.
We're not terribly beefed up, but this is the U.S. Trade Representative who is in place and has been given the authority to appoint people into positions below him, and you don't need a lot of presidential appointment in those positions. I think this is sort of interesting. I don't want to get too in the weeds on Korea trade, but I do see something developing here. There are, you know, about a dozen free trade deals that the president says he's working on, and that's a complete exaggeration to suggest that they're actually active negotiations. This mm-hmm. Trade Department has been very distracted recently because President Trump sort of keeps switching up the objective number one. It's either NAFTA, it's something with China, it's something with Japan, it's a new deal with Theresa May, it's something with the European Union or Canada. But this Korea one actually looks like it might move forward. And I find it interesting how seemingly willing the Koreans are here to give in to some of these American demands, and that these demands won't surprise you given what we know about President Trump. One is that he wants to be able to send more cars into South Korea and avoid their emissions targets, because in South Korea, the car companies are held to much higher standards even than here in the United States. And we currently have a cap that we can't put in. I think it's something like 25,000 cars from each auto manufacturer get to skip out on the emissions requirements, but anything more than that, we've got to be sending in our greenest vehicles. So Trump is insisting, hey, it's unfair that it's anti-competitive that you guys set these really high emissions targets. So we want more gas-guzzling American cars to be able to go into Korea. And in return, we don't want to drop our tariffs on South Korean-made pickup trucks.
Right.
And there's a reason that when you drive around, the heartland and many places, including where I live in New Jersey, you don't see when you see pickup trucks, you're not going to see a lot of Hyundai pickup trucks and Kia pickup trucks. It's not that they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we have a 25% tariff on them.
Ah.
President Trump, this was scheduled to be phased out next year. President Trump says, I want to keep that in place. So they're getting hit both ways, but not protesting very much. And it makes me think that the South Koreans might be willing to take a little bit of a hit in pride on a trade deal, give Trump some mojo by saying, hey, look at the deal I just made. But then they get to pursue an independent foreign policy when it comes to North Korea. I think that might be something that we're seeing come together here.
All right. I think anything that comes together, I think, comes together in spite of Trump, not because of anything he's done that's constructive.
I would think that's true, especially if, a free trade deal for South Korea with the U.S. versus being able to avoid waltzing into a war with North Korea is a much bigger priority for the South Koreans, even though President Trump might try to make it seem like the trade deal is the bigger one.
Right. There's so much other insanity going on. First of all, the U.S. is suspending funding for Pakistan. Did this just come out of nowhere? Did I miss something? Did I miss a memo somewhere along the line?
It seems like it came out of nowhere. And I think anybody taking bets on what issue President Trump was going to tweet about in his first tweet of 2018, Pakistan policy would have been very low down, but that's what he went with. And it's not a surprise to those of us who are watching this, because the president is continuing the U.S. war in Afghanistan. He's actually, as we saw over the course of last year, giving a lot more freedom for generals who are conducting that war to kind of do what they want without the president needing to even bother with troop details or things like that. As we've seen, President Trump doesn't like to take any criticism for military operations. He prefers to blame or applaud his generals for those sorts of things. So the generals have a wider leash in Afghanistan, and we're not ending that war. And there was a big review of U.S.-Afghan policy in August, and it basically almost echoed what the Indians have been saying, which is that Pakistan is to blame for everything, that, and there are reasons why the Pakistanis would want us to be parroting their own lines here, considering they're always in conflict with, India-Pakistan conflict. But no, so this is not a surprise. The U.S. is blaming Pakistan for most of the instability in Afghanistan, which is not altogether, that distorted. But it is, I think, quite telling that the U.S. is seeming to pretend that we have all the leverage in this relationship, when in fact, that's not really the case. We still need Pakistani intelligence to do a lot of our high-profile raids and to be able to be effective in countering terrorism in this war in Afghanistan. We need their airspace to carry out drone attacks, even though they often revoke permission and we do it anyways. we need that border and some of the transit links that go through it in order to supply our troops in Afghanistan. If you go back to the Bush years, there was an opening working with the Indians and the Iranians to completely circumvent Pakistan and create new ports that could be fueling American forces there. And instead, President Bush said, no, Iran is the axis of evil. We don't even want to hear this proposal. We're going to work with Pakistan. And we are just as reliant on them as we've always been to carry out this war. So a lot of tough talk about withholding hundreds of millions of dollars. But bear in mind also, this is not just money we were going to give them and they could do whatever they want. They had to, in turn, buy American military technology. So that's not all that toothy of a threat when you really dig down into it.
Right.
Well, and
it's also a nuclear power that we're antagonizing again. And, this is a guy who doesn't seem to understand the severity of what he does.
Yes. And I would point out, within the nuclear security community, there's a lot of concern that, as we focus on Iran and North Korea, that the Pakistanis are acquiring and building out their nuclear weapons program of tactical battlefield nuclear weapons faster than almost anyone else. And we are not applying much political pressure to try and stop that. And there is concern that if you cut off more and more funds to that government, if you hit the prestige of their military by denying them U.S. military equipment, that it actually might push them to kind of go rogue faster than they might if we were, working with them more constructively. So there could be some big consequences here on the nuclear front.
And on top of all that, Trump is antagonizing the Iranians as well. There are protests in the streets. Do we know what started this all going on over there this time?
It started on December 28th in the city of Mishhad, and if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and it was about the economy. And this makes sense. So the Iranian economy is not in a good place right now. Youth unemployment in many parts of the country, and it's a very stratified country. I mean, some parts are doing quite well. Other parts of the country are really ignored by the government. And we've seen reports of 45% youth unemployment at a time when there are millions of young people looking for work. Inflation is on the rise, and price controls, which President Rouhani took off in advance of the nuclear deal, thinking, all right, we can't really have this policy anymore because it's so expensive, but the nuclear deal is going to come into place. The world is going to start doing business with us. We'll have a little bit more money and the economy will correct itself. well, the U.S., especially under President Trump, has basically been sending the signal, you know, we're not going to blow up the nuclear deal just yet, but any foreign businesses that want to transact with Iran, you're going to be on our bad side. And so business really hasn't returned to that country. The economy is in a tailspin, and people are protesting about it. What we have seen, though, which is quite disconcerting, is President Rouhani, who's the quote-unquote moderate, he has very conservative enemies in the Revolutionary Guard, and there's a lot of evidence that they are trying to co-opt these protests. This is a strategy you've seen in Ukraine and elsewhere, which is people are having a legitimate demand, but send out, you know, rabble-rousers into the streets, get them to attack a police station, get them to kill maybe a member of the army, and then it justifies a big government crackdown. And also delegitimizes the man who's in charge. There's a lot of people out there who want Mahmoud Ahmadinejad back, or at least someone who's much more in line with the Revolutionary Guard. And I think the concern is here, and something the U.S. should be thinking about, and I do think there's some evidence that they are, is, you know, we want to support the protesters, we want to call for maintenance of human rights, but we're not calling for regime change, because this is a country where it's not like you call for new elections and you're going to get someone better than Rouhani. If these protests lead to a change in leadership, it's very likely someone of the mold of Ahmadinejad comes back into power, and then you've got just imagine Trump dealing with Ahmadinejad. It's going to be a lot worse than Trump dealing with Mr. Rouhani. So I think that's really the kind of third rail here.
And of course, I still feel Trump has no clue who he's dealing with, regardless of who it is. He just thinks they're all the same.
Right. He's certainly not taking up a historical moment, if you could call it that, by transacting with a somewhat moderate government in Iran, or even trying to give them an out. I mean, there are some things Rouhani could do if the global community, including the powers that negotiated the nuclear deal, wanted to kind of try and help him pursue economic reform and avoid, you know, worsening chaos and perhaps his replacement by an ultra-conservative. But obviously that's not something President Trump has very high up on his agenda, if he could even comprehend the complex politics of that country.
And it has only been 1 week into this new year.
Oh, yeah. Or 4 days, right?
We've all had kind of an
abbreviated week.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent for the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. Thank you so much, Luke.
Thanks, Nicole. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. So that's a little bit of what's going on in the world. It's Friday. We'll take a quick break. We're going to come back on the other side with an old friend of the show, Drift Glass, the blogger and podcaster, will join us and give us his some words of wisdom on how we get through the next 51 weeks, because I certainly don't know. We'll take a break and be right back. It's Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
The Mad Bladders here on RadioNot.com as we take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass.
When this old world starts getting me
that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
Yes, you can find Drift Glass at driftglass.blogspot.com and also at the proleftpod.com, the Professional Left Podcast with its groovy little URL that's easy to get to these days. Hey there, Drift Glass. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, darling?
Oh, I'm fighting my way through this new year. It's January 5th, and it feels like we've been at it for... you know, months already again. It's something about Trump days are like dog years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, we just wrapped our little podcast over here, and we remind our listeners that it was only a week ago that the big news was Mike Schmidt's article that he was allowed to interview Donald Trump for 30 minutes.
Right.
Unstructured. And oh my God, can you believe that? And then suddenly that's not even a story anymore because...
And it's not even the last one because Michael Schmidt has another article out.
Yep.
that broke late last night that took over for the Michael Wolff book. That, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's like, can we just stop and take a breath for a moment?
I would like to breathe. I want everyone out there to exercise good caution and good self-care and squad care. Take care of each other. Look out for each other. You know, we watch ourselves here at the Drift Glass home. I know when my wife has had too much of the Twitter.
Yes.
She knows when I have had too much of the angry. Mm-hmm. And we have a rule around our house that only one of us can be crazy at a time.
Ah.
So we try to stick to that. These days, it's a little bit hard because we're both in sort of the professional opinion business and the writing business and the research business. So this stuff is pouring in through a fire hose. And stuff that's really big and important, like offshore drilling and the nickel mines, mining being opened up again, is just lost in the haze. It's just lost in the din. And that happened this week, too. So it's quite a week.
Yeah, I missed the mining story. Now, I got the offshore drilling story because, again, I live here in South Florida. And I'm not a big Florida fan, as people who listen to the show regularly might get a glimpse of. But I do love the beach and the ocean. Yeah. And there was just a story I read, it must have been this morning even, you know, that the coral reefs are getting bleached. And to the Trump administration, that's just the new normal. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
It's killing off the oceans. And now he wants to open up 90% of the, what is it called? The ocean shelf or something?
The shelf, yeah. The shelf. And I was watching today on my liberal TV, I was watching the Hugh Hewitt, the cyborg sent from the future to destroy America, expound on the glories of fossil fuels and how awesome it is that all this bounty that history and God has placed in our lap, we're finally going to get to use it. And nobody just sort of dragged him out in a bag. He was just free. And it's really weird. It is weird. It must be like the last days of the collapse of the Soviet Empire from the inside, where events in the outside world are happening so fast and things are falling apart so fast that there's this small cohort of people who still control the cameras who are pretending that everything's fine. You know, there's a million Baghdad Bobs now, and they're all over television, and everything's fine. And literally in real time, right next to them are people saying, no, it's not.
Right.
It's really not fine. And I don't know if you saw the article by James Fallows this week.
No, I didn't. The Atlantic?
Yeah, it was very good. And it was relating the sexual abuse ongoing scandal, the Harvey Weinstein, for mm-hmm. matter of shorthand, but you know, it was the permission structure that was set up around these people that let them get away with murder. Let them just get, and everyone knew it. And once the dam broke and revelations came out, all the people who were closest to it said, well, everyone knew that. You know, everyone knew not to go to a hotel room with Harvey Weinstein. Everyone knew not to get a massage. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody didn't know that, you son of a bitch.
Right.
We didn't know that. Because you deigned not to tell us. Now, it's your business. It's your industry. That's entertainment. Fine. You didn't think the rest of us rubes needed to know that these people were monsters. Fine. But the same thing applies to politics now. Everyone knew that everyone in the Trump administration is a criminal, that Donald Trump is out of his friggin' mind, and mm-hmm. the entire Republican Party are corrupt and complicit in creating this machine that produced this monster. Everyone knew it. The difference is the people who knew it and didn't talk about it are friggin' journalists. It's their job to talk about these things, and they have spent arguably the last 25 years lying about it. Just lying about it, because it's impossible to have a story in which there's a villain called the Republican Party and keep your job in the mainstream media. It has
right.
to be both sides.
They
it
have
has
to
be
do
everybody.
The both-siderisms. They have to do the fair and balanced thing, which was a scam from day one. And
it certainly was.
And yet they it's their story and they're sticking to it.
And it's that story died about 7 years ago. I mean, it was always a lie, mm-hmm. but it became such it became so surreal. It became so impossible to do that with a straight face. Well,
right.
Or more importantly, it became impossible to do that in any venue where anybody might ask you a question about the efficacy of that lie. And that's when you started to see, we don't really want to have panels with actual people who might challenge any of this bullshit. So we're just going to have, you know, Peggy Noonan and Mike Barnicle and David Brooks. Uh-huh. And nobody's going to talk about the stuff they said last week. And nobody's going to point out what they're saying this week is insane. And we're just going to keep all the bad news away. And that's how we're going to cope with the fact the world's falling apart, is we're just going to deny it ever happened. And I sort of liken it to imagine if your local news guy, our local news guy here is Joe. So local news guy tells you every day that it's sunny and temperate outside. And you can see that it's not. Mm-hmm. You can look literally out your door and see that not only is it not sunny and temperate, but there's a hurricane blowing.
That's right.
And not only is there a hurricane blowing, but it's been blowing for 20 years. And every day Joe goes on TV and says, no, it's not. It's sunny and temperate. Right. And you can literally see through the window in Joe's studio on camera that he can see the hurricane too. At what point does it stop being a weather report and start being, what the hell's wrong with Joe?
It is the gaslighting of America. I talk about it as they're telling us that the sky is green. Donald Trump does this every single day, multiple times a day.
Sure.
Especially if you look at the Washington Post and they're keeping, you know, running tally on it. Multiple times a day, he tells you the sky is green. Now, you and I know damn well the sky is blue. I have a window right here. I look out. Sure. It's blue. But he's telling us it's green. And there are enough people out there who, because Donald Trump says it's green, believe it's green, and they tell us that we're crazy because we're insisting that it's blue.
Though, you know, those people, I mean, those people are my Republican colleagues and family members and acquaintances and friends over the years. I get them. You know, this whole idea that their message is not out there, or there's somehow they're not getting the word out, or they're not well represented in this country. No, dude, just open your window up in New Jersey and drive all the way to Nevada, and you'll hear all the way along the road, every TV station, every goddamn radio station, you'll hear Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin. These people have no trouble expressing their opinions. That we're drowning in their goddamn opinions. It's not like nobody knows who they are or what they believe. What is fascinating to me are the people who know better, who actually are supposed to know better, who keep not calling them on it. I get why crazy Uncle Liberty insists that Hillary Clinton murdered Vince Foster and that we need to have yet another Clinton investigation into those emails and the Clinton Foundation because something corruption.
Right. And they keep getting the emails telling them that that's what's happened. Sure.
And they've been getting them for 20 years.
That's
these are people who I refer to as reprogrammable meatbags. You can just tell them anything. And as long as it comes out of Sean Hannity's mouth, they'll believe it. And the fact that it contradicts what Sean told them yesterday doesn't matter. They don't have any higher political brain function anymore. They don't reason. They reject reason as a concept. So I get it. Those people are complete dead loss. They're unsalvageable. They're floating face down in the shallow end of the American gene pool, and they will never get them back. Got it. It's the people who look at those people and say, you know what? They have an opinion, and Drift Class has an opinion. And who can really say who's right or wrong? Those are the sons of bitches that have to go, because they're the ones who enable the monsters. They're the ones who give the monsters the alibi. The alibi you will always hear every wingnut say every time a lie blows up in their face.
Right. But
well, really, it's both sides. Really, isn't it both sides?
No, it's not both sides.
No, it's not. That's why David Brooks is the most evil man. I'm sorry. You know how I do with David Brooks.
I do. And it's one of the things I love about your Drift Class. I always know there's going to be a David Brooks reference there. But the truly frightening thing here is that Donald Trump is one of those people, not one of the both siderisms.
Exactly.
One of the true believers of the wingnut bullshittery, who, you know, there was a movie that came out a few years ago. I think it was called The Brainwashing of My Dad. And it was this woman, I think her name is Jen Senko or something close to that, who did a documentary about her father, who used to be a reasonable man, who, as he got older, he got hooked on watching Fox, the fake news channel.
And he took long commutes. and long commutes and radio, I believe. He got hooked on Rush Limbaugh.
Okay, and got brainwashed by this stuff. This is what I believe happened to Donald Trump. I'm not saying he was ever a reasonable man. He's always been a bit of a megalomaniac and a narcissist and you know, just a somebody with a personality disorder. But he now buys all the conspiracy theories, all of the Fox News bullshit, all of this Sinclair stuff that's going to even wind up being worse than Fox. He listens to the Alex Jones. I mean, the worst fringe of the fringiest fringe, and he believes it. And he's got these lemmings now who used to watch him on The Apprentice. Hey, he was on television. He must know what he's talking about. Who follow him like the lemmings they are. And that's why I think so many of us feel so hopeless or helpless right now, or have these giant knots in our stomach and have a hard time getting through each day.
Well, this is why you can take, like, you heard about this Roy Cohn comment, right?
Yes.
Where's my Roy Cohn? I found that, you know, appalling and horrifying, and all the things that any right-thinking person would think, is Roy Cohn was the scum of the earth, and
for
always
those
was.
Who don't know, this was Donald Trump talking about how his attorney general should be his protector, and he likened it to how Bobby Kennedy was to JFK, and how Eric Holder was to Obama. That these two attorneys general protected their presidents, and in the next breath he said, "Where's my Roy Cohn?" Well, first of all, Bobby Kennedy and Eric Holder were not Roy Cohn. I wasn't exactly a big fan of Eric Holder, but he was not Roy Cohn.
No, and that's the point. The structure of that is that his first thought is, I need a mob lawyer.
Yes.
But the structure under that is his firm belief, because he has internalized. That's why he was so popular with the wingnuts, because he internalized their vocabulary. He just was the voice in their head repeating back to them what they already believed. And so he was like a portable Fox News broadcast unit, and would stand in front of a crowd and talk about Mexicans in the wall and women and beat people up. And the deep state. And they loved it.
Yep.
But the reason he talked about Eric Holder is because he believed that the government of the United States is a gang of angry Negroes under Barack Obama, who are all conspiring with the Muslim Brotherhood and Black Lives Matter to screw everybody over and to wreck everything and destroy everything. And it was this back-scratching, racist conspiracy. Because when you're president, you get to do things like that. And that's what he believes. So when he got to the White House, he's like, okay, I'm in charge now. I get to do whatever I want. Because Fox News told me that there are no constraints on a president. That a president is a king. Because Barack Obama got to be a king. Barack Obama got to do whatever he wanted. Barack Obama got to lie and cheat and steal. And Hillary got to murder Vince Foster, for God's sakes.
Because Nixon said,
when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
And of course, his buddy Roger Stone idolizes Richard Nixon. It's not illegal. Right.
Something Paul Krugman said years ago is, I'll stop calling you Orwellian when you stop using 1984 as a playbook. and it's absolutely true. So Donald Trump arrived at the White House on the assumption that every paranoid crackpot conspiracy that Bannon and Alec Jones and Breitbart have told him for years was all true, which means that as a president, I get to do everything I want. Healthcare is going to be easy. Why? Well, because a bunch of Republicans said the healthcare would be easy, and so it must be. I get to put up a wall in a year. I get to do whatever I want. I get to hire a Rudy Giuliani to be attorney general if I want to. I get to do anything I want. And it turns out it doesn't quite work that way. And that has driven him nuts, because it's supposed to. Now he doesn't feel like, oh, I'm learning how the U.S. government works like a fourth grader. It's, oh, there must be some conspiracy out there that's keeping me from the real power of the presidency, which Barack Obama got to have because he's black and he's a liberal. And that's what black liberals do. So he's even angrier now. And it's reflected in every Republican I know. Republicans I know will not talk about Donald Trump anymore. They won't talk about they'll all talk about Colin Kaepernick. They're all still obsessed with Hillary.
Seriously.
Because they can't, because if they actually had to face the truth of who they are and what they've done, just like in the Bush administration, they'd go in the basement and blow their brains out.
You know, because they could. Yeah. Last night, we were watching the news breaking over the latest Michael Schmidt story in the New York Times about that Robert Mueller now has collaboration of what James Comey had said. And they have it through these notes that Reince Priebus kept in his own handwriting, that there is collaborative information. So David, my husband, says, I wonder how Fox is covering this.
Oh, so do you do that too?
Yes. Oh, all the time. Well,
we flip over to Fox and see what they're lying about today, they're lying about right this minute. And it's amazing.
The Chyron was something about Hillary Clinton and her emails. Yep. Like, seriously? That's what they're talking about. And they were talking about the special counsel having collaborative information now to back up what James Comey said. That was the whole reason, you know, for him being fired. I mean, it seems like the House of Cards is getting close to tumbling down, and they're talking about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Well, it will never collapse at Fox.
No.
It will never collapse. And we do the same thing. It's like, I wonder what they're lying about on Fox today. And we flip over, and there's that giant potato-headed moron, Sean Hannity, you know, getting all red-faced and angry because Hillary crooked, crooked, Hillary crooked. Laura Ingraham, a couple of days before Jeff Sessions decides that the devil's weed needs to be made illegal again because it leads people into jazz music and Negroes. what's on the Ingraham angle? The perils of marijuana. Like, oh, it's just a feedback loop. It's one constant feedback loop. And that will never collapse because Fox News viewers have no place else to go. They have absolute opioid level addiction to the lies they're being told every day. And their choice is either to do a 12-step, admit they're powerless before Fox News, that their lives are out of control, that they make horrifying decisions, and it's their goddamn fault, which they will never do.
Right.
Or they just go deeper. Wherever Sean is leading me, and Hannity's bad enough, you know, on any day, but now that Roger Ailes is dead and Bill O'Reilly has his own podcast. You know, is down at our level there.
Yes.
Nicole, you know, he's been dragged down to our level. You and me and Bill O'Reilly and David Gregory are all now just part of it. Now that they've fallen to our level, the only person over there who's deciding things is Sean Hannity, who's always been an idiot and always been terrible. So now it's just gotten exponentially worse. Well, where do they have to go? So here's what's going to happen. See, I'm not in the election prediction business anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm just in the, eventually what happened at the end of the Bush administration will happen here. It'll happen faster. It'll be more brutal. It'll probably be more bloody. It'll certainly be more loud. But what'll happen is the same people who had the Bush-Cheney lawn signs out in front and were calling us traitors for 8 years and swore that George Bush was the greatest president on earth, suddenly forgot that it ever knew George Bush.
Yep.
In 2009, they all became independents.
Oh, yeah.
David Brooks started writing columns about this new crop of independents who are now conservative, and maybe Democrats should pay attention to these independents because independents are really important. No, they're fucking Republicans. They're Republicans who will take no responsibility for the disaster they wrought. They're going to do it again. You can watch it out there right now. They're building their lifeboats. The whole Never Trump movement are a bunch of Republicans who figured out this whole ship's going to crash.
Right.
And we need to have a way out. So we're going to pretend, we're going to basically take what liberals have been saying about the right for 20 years and pretend that we just thought it up.
Right.
And instead of being castigated and exiled and never being allowed on television, we're going to be given our own goddamn show on MSNBC. We're going to be Charlie Sykes, and we're going to be Rick Wilson, and we're going to be heroes of the movement.
Although I got to tell you, I have been liking Jennifer Rubin. I've become a fan of hers.
She's gone all the way out. I mean, she ain't getting on my lifeboat, but I got to say she has been, for someone, she has become a liberal blogger circa 2004.
She has.
She really has.
And I like her. I turn up the TV when she's on. Yeah. There's some of the others like, all right, you know, glad to see you've entered the realm of reality here. But
yeah,
no.
Look, it's Mike Schmidt. Yay, Mike Schmidt.
Right. But she's seen the light, I think, and is horrified.
I'm sorry, Steve Schmidt. I'm sorry.
Steve Schmidt. Yeah, Steve Schmidt, the man who gave us Sarah Palin.
Exactly. And my friends say, oh, look, there's Steve Schmidt taking the seat that Driftglass should have on MSNBC.
Well, that's true.
And I do think of it that way. I think of it every time there is someone who has a long pedigree of being a right-wing asshole who called me a traitor during the entire Bush administration and then spent the rest of the 8 years pretending that they never said this shit, is on television. It's a liberal being robbed of their rightful place in the public square.
Yep.
Oh, period.
You're right. And anyway. And you're right. And you talk about the liberal television. You know, anyone who wants to say MSNBC is the liberal station is still, you know,
no,
smoking what Jeff Sessions wants to outlaw once and for all.
There are things on MSNBC that are noble and righteous and true, and I enjoy watching. But did you see Last Night with Lawrence O'Donnell and George Will?
No. See, George Will is one of those that I saw a little bit of it, and then I think I turned it off.
It was awful. It was awful because I normally think Lawrence is pretty good. He has worked in the Senate. He actually knows how television mm-hmm. works. So he gives some insight that you don't normally get anywhere else. But they were both praising Mitch McConnell for his reverence for the institution of the Senate.
Oh, God.
That's why Mitch McConnell's playing a long game. He's a smart man. And deep down, what drives Mitch is his reverence for the institution.
Oh, give me a fucking break. Mitch McConnell is the reason we have Neil Gorsuch sitting on the Supreme Court.
And I'm sitting there and my Twitter feed filled up with Merrick Garland. Why aren't you mentioning Merrick Garland? Lawrence, yeah. Why aren't you
Hello.
Talking about Merrick Garland?
That's right.
Well, because we're both Comcast employees. And I can't very well call out my fellow Comcast employee as a liar on camera. So I'll yuck it up with him.
Yep.
And that just depresses the shit out of me because it's like, okay, I don't know what I can trust. I don't know when you're lying to me because you won't call this obvious asshole out as he lies to your face. But when Joe Walsh was on your show 5 years ago, you screamed at him and told him you're never coming back on my show. Well, why? Because Joe Walsh wasn't a Comcast employee. If he were, I'm sure you'd have laid out the good linen for him.
Aren't we all now Comcast employees?
No, I'm too poor to be a Comcast employee.
Yeah, well, I am too. Now, I'm looking at in terms of, you know, we've got net neutrality now, the end of it looming down us. And so, you know, somehow, what's his name? Bill O'Reilly and David Gregory might be down on our level having to do podcasts, but I think they probably can afford the extra money that it'll cost them to be piped into people's homes when it gets to that point that you and I may not be so lucky.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, go right ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say one thing couldn't have been clearer about the way the Mercers yanked Bannon's chain this week.
Yes.
Was that money is the only thing that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Without a billionaire writing checks behind him, Steve Bannon would be a hobo living under a bridge screaming about black people. And the fact that he was the national security advisor, co-equal to the chief of staff, to the most powerful man on earth, and ran a presidential campaign, exists in this world only because crackpot billionaires wrote him big checks.
That's right.
If we on the left want to win, we need to, I don't know where you stand on this, we need to convince Tom Steyer to stop burning big piles of money on vanity commercials that are not going to go anywhere and start building radio stations and employing liberals across this country.
Please start funding, start donating to the Professional Left podcast, to the Nicole Sandler show.
Absolutely.
Because
a bunch of us out there.
There are a bunch of us out here and we're this ragtag kind of, loosely aligned group. Mm-hmm. I think we all try to, work well together, but we're this loose network, as it were, of people just trying to speak the truth every day, but with our voices getting ever more fainter with each passing day as Donald Trump does away with regulations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And the Rebel Alliance is still strong in my heart, but it is hard to say out loud, but it's true that, we have the best ideas. We have the best people. We have the best policies. Our arguments are all family arguments. We argue over how big the minimum wage should be.
Right.
We argue over really important, good grown-up stuff that you can honestly disagree over. We're not crazy, but we do have disagreements. And the only thing we lack, literally the only thing we lack, are billionaires willing to write big fat checks to drive our message into the Midwest. That's it. That's all we need. And the fact that there are rich liberals with very deep pockets who will not do this strikes me as, well, I guess I'm being played for a chump.
So if any of those are listening, you can go to proleftpod.com and make a donation there, or NicoleSandler.com and make a donation there and help support people like us who just...
They're
know.
Rich enough to do both, Nicole. They're rich enough
they
to
are.
Do both.
They are.
Not either or.
Absolutely.
Both. Look, J.B. Pritzker's running for governor in my state. J.B. Pritzker's a billionaire. J.B. Pritzker can afford to cut a check for a couple hundred grand for both you and me.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And with that, Driftglass, we're out of time. Time just flies. It's always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us today and helping me finish the week on an up note.
It's my honor.
I will talk to you again soon, I hope.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.